This week on Barbell Shrug, we interview Dr. Brad Cole and talk about how to train injury and pain-free.
Woo!
Oh my God!
Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm Mike Bledsoe, here with Doug Larson and Chris Moore.
Hello.
With our guest, Dr. Brad Cole.
Hi.
An actual doctor.
Ooh, real doctor.
School for a long time.
Not the made-up ones we normally have on the show.
That's right. Not one of those doctors. That's a people with PhDs.
How many doctors? We have three doctors.
One of those doctors.
Here on the show, right? Is it just three? Dr. Schilling, Dr. Galpin.
Dr. Lones.
Dr. Lones. That's true.
That's right.
So four. We're four.
Off.
We know smart folks.
Yeah, we're off topic already.
Dr. Brad Cole is a chiropractor here in Memphis, Tennessee, and he treats a lot of our athletes, as well as me and Doug. And I don't know, does he treat
and
you?
A ton of our athletes.
Yeah, I've been had a session.
Okay, had a session with the ball ping hammer.
Yep.
And
getting exposed.
Yeah, today we're gonna be talking about pain and how to avoid it. But first.
Is this a philosophical discussion? Or
we're going to get very philosophical. Okay.
That'd be fine.
I took the right pills for that today. But no, I didn't.
Just cruise on past what you just said.
No, I didn't. Make sure to go to barbellstrug.com, sign up for the newsletter, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter and all that kind of stuff. Hopefully by now, we have another podcast that we started up, Doug and I did, called Barbell Business. So if you go to barbellbusiness.com, if you're a coach who is a manager or a gym owner or something like that, you can go to that website. And then if the podcast isn't already starting to post up at this point, it's about to. So, but you can go ahead and put your email in the newsletter form on that website, and we'll make sure to notify you, and you'll be one of the first people to hear that podcast, hear it from the very, very beginning. So we actually recorded the first one a few days ago, and we had a really great time doing it. It's not nearly as long as this one, by the way.
I had a ton of fun recording that podcast. More fun than that I have on Barbell Shrugged, truth be told.
You're such an asshole.
I know.
How dare you?
No one wants to listen to this one. It's not Doug's favorite.
Well, Doug, great. I understand what you're saying, because I do the Barbell Buddha one. It's a chance for you to do just what is your niche, talk more about business.
Yeah.
So it's natural. Go with it.
It's cool. Like,
embrace the emotion.
The fitness stuff
of it.
I've been doing my whole life. And so talking about it, it's not really that novel to me.
You don't learn as much, you say.
Yeah, I don't learn as much. I when I hear someone else's perspective, I feel like, oh yeah. Like, I've heard it all before. Yeah. It's more of the same. But the barbell business is a little more novel to me, because business is a newer thing in my life. I've only been doing it for a couple of years. So I have a little more drive, a little more passion to talk about barbell business stuff. So anyway, if you want to learn more about business, go to barbellbusiness.com. We'll stick to Barbell Shrug for the day, and we'll completely ignore Brad.
All right.
It's the intro, dude.
Yeah. Now the intro's over. Now we'll get on the discussion. We actually practically did the show prior to the show, talking to Dr. Cole. Mm-hmm. But we were discussing how people, a lot of times, they wait until they're hurt, and they think that the very thing that they did when they started feeling pain was the cause. And you were talking about how that might not very well be the case. And I think we touched on that a little bit in our squat episode as well. You know, an argument for building up a good squat is to avoid injury in the future. Can you go into a little bit, like, maybe some stories of some people that have come to you with some back pain, and then you're like, well, you know, it's because you move wrong.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, the types of pains that I work with are ones that develop because the movement's off. And so, like we were talking about earlier, and we'll talk about today, that, you know, how movement affects pain, how we can figure out how to fix movements and, you know, keep things moving well. Mm-hmm. And I think we mentioned a couple other things we'll talk about today too, in regards to mobility versus stability, and how mobility problem.
Very different thing.
Well, that was the thing we were talking about prior to the show, is how mobility is such a popular thing.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And people think about, like, chiropractic topic. Or physical therapy, or they think about Kelly Starrett and Mobility Wad, and everyone's like, we got to get, you know, these joints into, you know, this range of motion.
And stretch
they
it,
really
bang
don't
it,
think
yeah.
about passive versus active range of motion. And mm-hmm. and then you were talking about stability, and it's something that I'm quick to forget, too, unless yeah. we're talking about core stability.
Well, sure.
What are some other types of stability, maybe, in other joints that we want to look for?
Yeah, stability is basically controlled movement. It's motion control. So, I mean, from you guys in the coaching world and from people that are they're doing CrossFit exercises, they're looking at technique. And technique is basically control. Mm. And so when it comes to our movements...
That blew my mind.
When it comes to our movements, how we move, if it is not controlled, it'll result in pain. Because something's not, you know, there's a wear and tear, there's inflammation, which is causing pain.
I like the way you said that. I've never really explained stability quite in that way. Mm-hmm. The way I usually describe it is that it's not moving in the presence of potential change. It means you could move, but you're strong enough not to.
Yeah.
So like as an example, your low back when you squat, mm-hmm. your back, or you bend over, your torso bends forward, but your back mm-hmm. position doesn't change. You don't hyperextend or you don't flex. You're not moving your back, but you're bending forward. You're maintaining a position as the rest of your body moves.
Sure.
So controlled movement is an interesting way to say that, because you're moving, but you're controlling how one specific joint position is while the rest of your body is moving. And that's a good way to think about stability, I think.
Yeah, precisely. So, you know, through that squat, you're not supposed to be, you know, flexing or extending, mm-hmm. but with the load, there's a stress across it that you hold stiff. Mm-hmm. All right. But if you take a step back, look at all the joints in series, all those motion segments through any movement, we'll stick with the squat. Mm-hmm. There should be a balance of the mobility and stability. Mm-hmm. And in fact, somebody could even have a good looking technique. This is where it gets difficult. Somebody have a really good looking squat technique, but the way the muscles are contributing to that stability or that movement mm-hmm. is problematic. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's not. But
how do you tell?
You got to break it down. And so we talked about squat. Well, you guys talked about squat a while back. The number one best screen would be an overhead squat. Mm-hmm. All right, that shows you everything. And if there's a problem there, you can break it down. So like some potential problems in overhead squat would be like an ankles too stiff or shoulders too stiff or low back isn't controlled, or maybe the knees are diving in and not controlled, right?
Mm-hmm. So the knees diving in might be not a mobility issue at the hips or ankles, but it might be a stability issue.
You've got it. Yeah, it could be a stability issue out there at the hip. And mm-hmm. so from that's how you tell. You break it down. All right. And so this is what I do in my office. Somebody comes in, they say, my knee hurts when I squat. It's like, great. So we just have them squat mm-hmm. and look at it. And from that, if there's a problem, we'll break it down. So then, you know, maybe the knees are diving in, so it causes some, you know, some stress to the inside of the knee as it dives in. Mm-hmm. We'll break it down and see what's the problem. Is it the ankle not working correctly to mm-hmm. stabilize it? Is the hip not working correctly to stabilize it? Or maybe they squat okay, but the quads are too dominant, right? And so it causes some extra compression at the kneecap. And so you can, you know, there's different tests to look at that mm-hmm. movement.
How would you tell if their quads were dominant? Like, yeah. in the office.
Sure, like. Sure. You can, you know, having somebody do a movement when they're on their feet gives you a lot. And then if you repeat a movement while they're laying down, then it changes some of that control mechanism. Mm-hmm. And you
some
can
of the
look
other
at
muscles
it
so turned like, off. You can see the other ones working in a more isolated sort of like a laboratory almost experiment where you take everything exactly. out of the picture and you can see an isolated muscle group working.
Precisely.
So if
right.
you squat while standing, just a regular mm-hmm. air squat, mm-hmm. and then you lie on your back and you just basically bring your knees up to your chest, you're basically squatting while lying on your back.
Yeah,
and so you're able to see, yeah, totally deloaded or unloaded, however you want to say it. People debate
unload.
Stupid stuff like that.
I hope we don't debate that here.
I hope not to. Oh, you're doing the same movement pattern in a D unloaded environment.
uh-huh.
And you can see if there's any changes.
You got it. Exactly.
Okay, so the classic example that you're referring mm-hmm. to is, you know, mm-hmm. someone can only do like a quarter squat standing, and then they lay mm-hmm. on their back and they can bring their knees all the way up to their chest without rounding their spine, and all of a sudden they have hip range of motion.
Yeah.
But then you stand them back up and they can't do it, and that's a stability problem because you know they have the range of motion, but
exactly,
they just don't have the stability to do it while standing, so their body kind of shuts down.
Exactly right. And it's so sad when somebody's, you know, pounding away at their hip range of motion because they only have a quarter squat, like you said, when they're standing. Mm-hmm. Well, you put them on laying on their back and they've got that extra range.
Right.
And so then it's a stability problem. It's a motor control issue. Mm-hmm. That's the issue.
We did a very similar thing. I came to you a while back, and I was having some neck pain, and it turns out that my mid cervical is kind of hypermobile, and so we looked above and below it, as you know, as you do when you're injured, to see if there's any problems with the joints right above or the joints right below for mobility or stability. And turns out that my kind of upper thoracic and my upper cervical both are a little bit stiff, and so I was getting too much range of motion mid cervical. And then when we tested my thoracic range of motion for my upper back, I could rotate just fine passively. But then when I did it actively, I had very poor range of motion. I had a stability problem in my thoracic spine. Exactly. Is that correct?
Exactly right. And, coming to that conclusion is a process. And so it all started with us to sit down, you tell me, you know, everything you've done before to try to address it, what made it hurt, what made it, you know, what made it feel better, your strategies for self-care and things that you've been working on. And then from that, I realized that, you know, you had tried a lot of different stuff and had some successes with some of it, but nothing really sustainable. And so when someone has gains that are sustainable, they usually look closer at the stability because those gains simply aren't being maintained.
A lot of times when I talk to people about stretching, they're like, I stretch all the time. And what they mean is that they're reaching down, touching their toes, and that is it. They're stretching like in one movement pattern, one simple way. They might do bend to the side, reach over like this, and that is about it. And they're not thinking about the whole rest of the body. There's so many different places you can be tight. There's so many different places to address. It's good to get an assessment so you actually know where you're tight, so you even know what to stretch. Most people stretch where they're flexible because it makes them feel good. I got flexible hamstrings. I stretch my hamstrings all the time, and I'm good at it, and so it makes me feel good.
My favorite one is I stretch my lower back. My lower back hurts, so I stretch it.
Bend over and you sort of bounce around.
I don't know about that.
Just because it feels good doesn't make it right.
Sure. But
another angle on that.
There's a lot of things in this world that feel good.
Well, another angle on that is people say, I need to get more mobile. I know that when I snatch, I'm not, my shoulders are in bad position because I'm so bent over. I know I need to improve that. So what they do, they kind of go, okay, I'll come in the gym and I do all this stuff. And I stretched and they did it for 5, 10, 15 minutes maybe. But they didn't have an assessment. They didn't understand, have somebody explain to them, here's my eyes looking at you. Here are the real issues. They go, I know I need it, but they don't take it to the next, they don't elevate it to the point where they're really making it as important as all the effort they put into like learning the snatch itself. And that's why the gains don't come, because they know they need to do it and they fool around with it, but they don't really invest in the understanding enough to get at the real issue.
Right. So if someone comes to you, say they have low back pain, what's kind of the process they go through, or like that you put them through rather, as a chiropractor looking to fix whatever pain they have?
Yeah, sure. Back to what you're saying earlier too. If someone spends a lot of time stretching, right, then you know there's a reason that they have to stretch all the time. So you know, asking those questions, why? And so like that's where I start with somebody. You know, if somebody comes with an active pain complaint, and we start saying, oh, you know, what do you do for it? What have you not done for it? What have you conceded? Things that you said, well, I just not gonna do that ever anymore because of the pain. And those concessions kind of chip away into someone's life. And they kind of forget about those things, and they start to learn and live and behave differently because of the pain. And so that, you know, just having that conversation for, you know, until we can get a really good handle on what's going on is really helpful, because time spent in assessment saves a lot of time in treatment. I mean, if somebody comes to their back hurts, I can you know, tear off a piece of paper, it shows them low back stretches, and it'll make them feel better for about 10 minutes every time they do it. But I think that's a poor strategy to manage the issue, because the pain's there for a reason. If there's a muscle that's always tight and you stretch it all the time, well, the muscle's tight for a reason.
It'll tighten again.
Precisely right. Yeah, there's a certain pattern to it, right?
So actually, can you give an example on that? Why a muscle would be tight for a reason?
Okay, well, I was at a race a couple of days ago, just talking and you know stretching people out and icing stuff down and taping stuff up, you know, just getting out there. And okay. then, but for my from my perspective, though, it's kind of ironic for me to do that, because somebody comes and says, I've got this thing that's tight, and I don't really start stretching them. I start talking to them about, why that could be. Mm-hmm. And so I've got someone out there, as opposed to simply stretching his IT band, I've got him, doing monster walks and strengthening his lateral stability. Mm-hmm. So he's a good athlete. They're good athletes, and they're moving well, and they're moving mm-hmm. hard, and they're very successful. But if there's a pain or a tightness that keeps popping up, it's for a reason. Mm-hmm. So a specific example would be somebody's got some lateral knee pain, or maybe it's not painful because they stretch it out all the time. Mm-hmm. They're stretching their IT band, they're rolling the foam rolling out, they're stretching it all the time.
Right.
The question is, well, why would they need to do that? And mm-hmm. so you put them into a pistol, and they say, well, I'm terrible at that on the right leg. So
just on one side,
I don't do it on the right leg. Exactly.
It's, okay.
Yeah, just like we were saying, if you're not very good at it, it's no fun to do. Mm-hmm. And so they conceded pistols.
Well, we all want to run away from what we're bad at, right?
Sure. Of course, I do too. don't get philosophical here.
Yeah,
run away. Oh, I'm going to do it anyway. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You know, that's a fine balance to do as a business owner, like between giving somebody what they want and what they need. Someone comes to you and they're like, oh man, I'm really tight right here. Can you mm-hmm. stretch this for me? And mm-hmm. you kind of got to be like, yeah, no problem. And you got to show them the stretch and kind of like mm-hmm. make them feel good. They came to you for a stretch. You gave them a stretch, but it's in the back of your mind, that's not really what they needed to fix the problem. So you, mm-hmm. you kind of do that and make them feel better. And then you got to kind of backtrack afterward and say, okay, well, now that we've done that mm-hmm. and maybe you feel better in the moment, but if you don't want to have to come back again, then mm-hmm. we need to do these other things. And then you can give them other exercises to prevent the problem in the future.
Exactly.
You're trying to find the, not treat the symptoms. Them, mm-hmm. you're trying to find the cause of the problem and treat that instead, sure. which in their mind might not be connected to the problem at all. Mm-hmm. Someone comes to you with back pain and you're like, well, it's your ankle mobility. And they're like, what the hell are you talking about? This guy is crazy. I don't get it.
Yeah.
And so you got to treat that one thing and then kind of backtrack and treat the other thing. And that's a fine balance mm-hmm. to walk if you're trying to keep someone as a long-term client, because if you don't explain it very well, they might just think you don't know what the hell you're talking about and never come back again.
Yeah. And well, that's what I'm there for too. I've got a responsibility not only to make them feel better, that's the easy part, but mm-hmm. to also educate.
Right.
And I think that's what people really want too. That they may not know that they need it, or they might not, they might not think about it, mm-hmm. Strategies for me to be able to regain things that I've conceded previously, mm-hmm. And prevent this from popping up again. Mm-hmm. They most of them don't even know that's an option, mm-hmm. but what I do is explain to them like this. First, we get a diagnosis. Your back hurts and it's not, it's not all these scary things. It's a movement related issue that we can address. Here's how we can make it work better in the short run. Mm-hmm. And so we'll start doing that now, and we'll get you feeling better, over whatever time frame it is. Mm-hmm. And then here's strategies for you to check the movement on your own, fix it if it's messed up, mm-hmm. to keep it from being a an ongoing problem. Mm-hmm. Or, we can just make it feel better too, and that's fine also. It really has to do with people's goals, what they would like to do, and. Also, the overall health status, sometimes there's a lot going on, and so you can't fix everything at once.
Mm-hmm. So Mike mentioned low back pain and having range of motion at your low back. I need to stretch my low back, and typically that's not something we really prescribe. Like, I don't prescribe anything technically. Mm-hmm. I'm not licensed. I'm not allowed. The man says I can't prescribe anything, but
fuck you, the man.
Yeah. Right. But you're not really supposed to try to gain that much range of motion at your low back. You do need a requisite amount of range of motion at your low back, but usually you're trying to get more range of motion at your hips below and your thoracic spine above, and in the form of extension and rotation. So your low back usually doesn't need that much range of motion. As long as it can move through a small amount of range of motion that it was designed for, usually you don't need to gain much more range of motion. People get tight low backs, they think they need to stretch it. That's usually not what they need to do. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of go over like the different types of joints and which ones really need more mobility and which ones you want to train specifically for stability, kind of mm-hmm. following a Gray Cook's joint by joint model?
Oh,
Mike
sure.
Boyles to yeah. not yeah. leave them out entirely.
Well, there's two ways to think of it. That makes it really easy. And I'm a picture person, visual person. And mm-hmm. I don't have anything to show, so just think of it like this. If it's an area that's usually painful, mm-hmm. It's one of the looser joints. It's if an area that's usually forgotten, it's a tighter joint. Okay, so
The loose joint is the painful joint usually.
And so where do people have surgeries, and where do people have things torn up? Knees and low backs, right? Those are usually looser joints. Areas that are usually tighter and get undertreated, thoracic spine, their mid-back, their hips, their ankles.
So with, in the case of the knee and the low back, those are usually what people describe as quote-unquote stable joints, as in they're supposed to be stable.
Exactly.
And so if they're loose and not stable, if your knee dives in and it's not only bending, and now when it dives in, it's twisting instead of just bending, and it's loose in rotation, then it tends to get hurt. Your low back, if you squat down and it rounds, you're flexing your spine or hyperextending your spine, and it's moving more than it's supposed to, then your low back tends to get hurt too. So if you have stiff ankles and stiff hips, you're going to move too much at your knees, too much at your low backs, and then you're going to hurt your knees and your low back.
Exactly right. And so those are, you know, those are joint pain syndromes. But now let's think about the muscle pain syndromes. You know, the muscles that are usually irritated, those are the ones that are attempting to stabilize. Okay, so you've got like a, so hip muscles that are attempting to stabilize the knee. Let's continue with the knee example. The IT band, that syndrome right there, it's irritated because the IT band is attempting to help stabilize the knee because the glutes, the deep muscles of the hips, just aren't really doing their job adequately.
And your glutes tie into your IT band.
Exactly right.
So your IT band's a big tendon that runs down the side of your leg. Your TFL, when your hip flexors connects to it, your glute max connects to it, kind of TFL on the front, glute on the back. And if you're not contracting your glutes, your knees are diving in, and then that, that big tendon isn't pulling on your knee joint area kind of in the same line, and then you end up getting knee problems.
Exactly right.
Say what TFL means. I'm correcting.
Tensor fascia lata. Sound like a real word.
Like a latte?
Sounds like a latte. Food.
Rather like
something I should eat.
It sounds delicious.
Latte.
I know.
Who names these muscles?
What what are we talking a little bit about? Why do you think people avoid, you know, attacking, you know, they wait till their knees hurt or their lower back hurts or something like that when the problem is the ankles, and you go into the doctor and they're going to do a knee surgery. It's like, and you know, we were talking about the heart health thing. You know, it's like everyone goes to and gets a physical done, and the doc goes, "Well, your cholesterol's high. You're, you know, we're predicting that you're a good candidate for heart problems. You know, let's start you on, you know, these drugs or something like that. You know, something that's going to be preventative in nature. You know, you should probably start exercising and eating right." They may not tell you exactly how to do that, but they know what drugs to prescribe, right? But you know, wouldn't it be cool, like, if you went and got your physical, if they did, like, some type of assessment to find out if your knee's going to start going to shit, you know what I mean?
That's a really good idea.
So, like, why? What do you think it would take to start getting that done?
How come,
like,
no one
make
ever
that comment
thought of that before you?
Well, I'm a genius. Yeah. I'll take all the credit. Yeah.
When it comes to cholesterol, there's a test for that, right? But what a lot of people don't know, when it comes to movement, there's also a test for that. There's you know, the functional movement screens. You know, a lot of other rehab guys have put together some standards, and previously the standard was, you know, just range of motion. Can you touch your toes? And they didn't really care how, because that was the only normative values that we've had. But now, through the, you know, through the work of a lot of good researchers and rehab specialists, we've got, you know, like things like the functional movement screen, which is, you know, they've taken thousands and thousands of people, put them in the database. And so we know what movement, not just range of motion, but movement quality norms look like. And it's been tested. And we know that if you move with better quality, you're preventing injury. That's why they use it at, you know, at, when they're working with NFL and NBA guys, because they've got millions of dollars riding on it, and they want to predict injury, so they use these movement screens.
So go over the functional movement screen, how it works. There's seven different movements. It's scored from zero if you're in pain to up to three if you do it perfect. Kind of go over how that screen works, and then why they know that it works across a wide range of people, the studies they've done on it, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, to give a little bit of history, I'm not part of the organization, but they're a top-notch organization, and I've subscribed to a lot of their a lot of the stuff that they published. But basically, the Titleist Performance Institute, that's the guys that make the golf balls, right? Realized that they can sell more golf balls if people played more golf. And think about who plays. Yeah, I know.
It's crazy.
You think about who plays golf, right? Who plays the majority of golf? They're, you know, they're usually older guys.
People with money. Mm-hmm. I know that.
People have buy a lot of golf balls. And
this guy's thinking ahead.
Buy the equipment. But yeah, they're usually the little guys. And so they stop playing golf. They stop playing golf because things start hurting.
Yeah, the back hurts.
Yeah, the back hurts. They've been, you know, been riding a desk for 40, 50 years, and they, you know, jump into retirement and start playing some golf. And yeah, they can't really hack
with
it.
Shitty range of motion and bad mechanics. And back there hurts. You go. It's a recipe for disaster.
Ballistically.
All that money.
So, the Titleist Performance Institute got together, and they're a multidisciplinary team of chiropractors and physical therapists and medical doctors and researchers, mm-hmm. people who love movement, and basically sat down, put together screens, and they've been testing it for I guess almost 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And from this point, they've got a lot of data about normative values. And so the test has been put together, and there's 7 movements that are basic. And so if you're an elite CrossFit athlete, or if it's a little lady that's just trying to get in shape, start walking better, mm-hmm. You can still apply this type of a movement screen. And then from that, it's graded and scored in a standardized way. Mm-hmm. And it gives a kind of a roadmap, a corrective roadmap. And the FMS was geared more towards coaches and fitness professionals. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, specific for healthcare professionals. Mm-hmm. Because whenever you get to something that's painful, you stop and then figure out orthopedically what's causing a problem there to get that addressed. Because you can't
have a whole other assessment for that.
Yeah, there's a separate assessment that basically just goes a lot more in depth.
Are they trying to get these assessments out to like people who are performing physicals? Because I know that right now people don't get these, you know, assessments done unless they walk into, you know, a quality strength conditioning facility, mm-hmm. or a doc, you know, a chiropractor or a physical therapist, or, you know, they're usually already hurt, or they're, you know, trying to, you know, take their strength and conditioning to the next level.
Yeah.
That's not most people.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Like, I was working with the rugby team, and I said, hey, I'll just, you know, just as a public health, you know, standpoint, just be a good, you know, citizen and say, hey, I'll do all your physicals. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was the movement screen was part of the physical, because that's where we really got it. Because these guys, you know, these kids, high school kids, are playing rugby. Mm-hmm. So first we, you know, check the heart and lungs, make sure there's no other issues there, right, or risks. But then look at the movement. And wow, talking about preventing some injury and giving, and everybody had a corrective to go work on.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
I mean, if you go to the doctor and you have back pain, the mm-hmm. doctor's really just to make sure that you don't have like a tumor in your back. He's going to do some scans. He's going to make sure that you don't have kidney cancer. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, you need to start looking at your everyday movement patterns. So the functional movement screen is cool because it runs you through an overhead squat, a lunge, mm-hmm. you lie on your back, you raise your leg up straight, kind of like a hamstring mm-hmm. type stretch, even though there's mm-hmm. a little bit more to it if you dig into to the screen. Yeah. You do a shoulder mobility test where you reach behind your back, see if you can touch your hands together, and mm-hmm. you do it on both sides to see if you're even. They're always looking for symmetry in the functional movement screen. I think Greg Cook says that beyond a previous existing injury, movement asymmetry is the number 2 predictor of injury. So if you've been hurt before, you're likely to get hurt again in the same way. But if you move differently side to side, then you're likely to get injured. The way I usually explain it to people is if you go for a full speed sprint and you have tight Wrangler jeans on one side and loose running shorts on the other side, you're going to run.
Oh, those Wrangler jeans give me every time.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to move differently side to side, right? Well,
think of the chafing.
We should test.
Think of the chafing.
We should test that.
It just seems
we
like
should. Experiment waiting to happen, but
can that be the
that should be the intro.
Yeah, you got tight Wranglers around anywhere. Can you wear some of your wife's Wrangler
tight
jeans?
Tight,
you
know, business pants.
I
do ready.
I have some ridiculously,
I got loose running shorts.
I got one even better, ridiculously tight jorts. Cut
shorts.
Off.
You got some of those.
Yeah, I do. They're for the, I usually save them for the river, but I might break them out for a science experiment.
We did have a guy who used to squat in really tight jorts. To the point where one time he tore right through the middle of his crotch on his jorts, and his jorts is, those are jean shorts if you don't know what we're talking about. And his jorts hung there like a little jean mini skirt.
The best part,
he went out to his car and got another pair.
This is the best. Yeah, that's the best part of the story. Squatting. It's like, what are you gonna do now that your shorts are torn? He's like, he goes out of his car and grabs another pair of jorts. I'm like, what?
He's real country. He's like, I got more in my car.
He just has like an endless supply of jorts.
I always carry 2 jorts.
That's right.
All right, guys. Take a break real quick. When we come back, we'll talk more about stuff that I don't know about yet.
We'll figure it out as we go.
Hey guys, this is Rich Froning, and you're listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to fitter.tv.
And we're back. All right. Yeah. I guess I'll go back through the intros again. Mike Bledsoe here again with Doug Larson and Chris Moore, and our guest, Dr. Brad Cole. You may have forgotten after that awesome technique wad that was in between in the middle of this show somewhere.
Was there an awesome technique wad?
Yeah.
I guess there should be.
Okay. Yeah.
Good.
Cool. So we were talking about number one predictor of injury is...
You're on the spot. This is the after the jorts discussion,
the
right?
Jorts. Okay.
Yeah, the number
Oh, wait,
one,
wait.
Yeah,
we didn't bring that up before the jorts.
Somewhere in there.
What's number one?
There's jorts, and then there's the number one predictor for injury. Okay, so when it comes to training, focus on durability. Yeah, you know, have a long goal of durability, and that's what's going to make you know really separate you from the other athletes.
So that's kind of an ambiguous term, durability.
Durability, yeah, how long you can go before things start to break down.
Okay.
So for those that you know, it really becomes an issue for those that are on the competitive circuit. You look at the top competitors, and they're very durable. Mm-hmm. All right, they move well with good quality consistently.
Right.
Even when they're gassed. Mm-hmm. Right. And they do so over longer time frames too. So better durability to prevent injury.
So they're durable because they have good technique at all times, even when they're fatigued. Is that kind of what I heard you say?
That's correct. Yes, and because they focus on good technique, okay? Because if there is a movement or if there's a stability or a mobility problem, it doesn't hurt. Mm-hmm. The average Joe doesn't care, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in the long run, something's going to go wrong, and we know that from research studies that. Like we were talking about earlier, the number one predictor for injury is if there's been a previous injury.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you can't change that. The number two predictor, and it comes on really, really, it comes in well before any mobility issue. The number two predictor is if there is an asymmetry. So left to right side of your body, there's asymmetry.
A movement asymmetry.
That range of motion or that stability asymmetry from left to right.
Right, you're moving differently side to side.
We have a good example of that with myself. I was talking to Dr. Cole in my kitchen before we were doing this, and I was talking about I have a recurring hamstring injury on my right side. So I already have the number one predictor, previous injury.
True.
Number two is I've noticed that my right foot always wants to kick out a little bit, and it doesn't have as the internal rotation of that hip is on the right side is just not as good as the left.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about now I've got two. I'm stacking now.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. It's looking bad for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, some amount of asymmetry is totally normal. Like, as a right-handed person, you're going to have certain
right-handedness
patterns that are going to, that are going to be normal. You're going to have less ankle mobility on your right side, more likely. You're going to have less glute strength on your right side, more quad strength on your right side, less glute strength on your left side. Some of that stuff is totally normal, and you really can't work around it just because you do some things with one hand at all times. Like, you're always going to kick a soccer ball.
It's all that skateboarding, man.
That's right.
Oh, that's
you got your longboard.
By the way, I'm
longboarding on Saturday night.
I could have made
midnight.
A masturbation joke that I won't.
You won't. We won't even bring it up, in fact.
He always does some things with one hand. I'm not even going to say that joke.
Should I?
He always uses the mouse with his right hand, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Should I ditch the skateboard? Is that screwing me up?
Well, you gotta highlight those asymmetries, figure them out with a movement screen. And so you've observed on your own, looking at your foot when you walked across the bathroom floor that there could be an asymmetry there. But how much more could you know, spending a couple minutes with somebody like me to figure out exactly?
just a suggestion. You should use me.
So Mike is self-assessing. Not a good idea.
You can't see your own shadow.
Do you kick with both legs?
Don't do a self-assessment.
Do you kick with both legs on your skateboard?
Yeah.
Not primarily a right foot kicker.
Yeah,
but I'm trying to not kick at all. Trying this new thing called pumping.
It's called staying still.
Yeah. Total body stability.
We'll do a technique wad on pumping your board.
Nice. Okay, wink, nice. Wink,
wink, wink. Yes, right. Sorry, go ahead and continue.
Then there's boarding, but just also thinking about rotational athletes, there's asymmetries there.
Oh, yeah.
And then how many people are actually out there that avoid doing single leg stuff? You guys have been talking about some single leg work recently. single arm, single leg, they avoid it because it's hard to do. They can't lift as much. It's, you know, that's not as fun. It's
boring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they might not be good at one side, so mm-hmm. kind of avoid it.
You brought up a good point with the rotational athletes. If you golf or play baseball or anything like that,
tennis.
Tennis, anything where you hit or throw something, for the most part, you're doing all that explosively in one direction only and mm-hmm. never on the other side. So you're bound to have a bunch of funky asymmetries. Mm-hmm. I don't know tennis and all these other sports, but baseball specifically, mm-hmm. I know a lot of pitchers have a huge internal rotation deficit on the right side. They have a huge internal rotation deficit on their plant leg. If I throw right-handed, my left leg is my plant leg. Mm-hmm. They have a huge internal rotation asymmetry on their left hip. You develop these asymmetries, and fixing those asymmetries goes a long way to keeping you from getting injured after you've been doing that sport and that same movement pattern over and over again for years and years on end.
Well, yes, and also to an extent, because a lot of those true rotational athletes, they do have some asterisks on their movement screen. Mm-hmm. That where, you know, it's not as important for some, you know, for asymmetry at some of mm-hmm. those tests, but not others. So that's why it's helpful to have somebody that's, you know, that's what they do to look into it. So give you a good objective assessment mm-hmm. because that time spent in an assessment saves a lot of time in treatment. So maybe they can avoid, you know, torquing at their shoulder for 30 minutes every time they train.
Right. So let's go a little bit into the movement screen. Okay, we said that it was scored seven different movements. And I said it was 0 to 3. Kind of, how do you know if it's a 0, 1, 2, or 3? What does that even mean?
Sure.
It's subjective.
If there's any pain or discomfort, mm-hmm. then that's a 0, and then they should at that point be kicked off to a medical or a movement health professional.
Okay.
All right.
Let's use the overhead squat just to make it so people can visualize while we're talking. So you're doing an overhead squat, you have pain in your knee while you're doing it, you get a 0.
0.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about 1, 2, or 3 with the overhead squat?
1 means that based on those standards that the movement looks awful. Mm-hmm. All right. And so that's a problem. That's usually when a good coach says, "Whoa, stop, don't do that." You know.
Okay.
Let's go fix this first.
Right. The way I used to define a 1 was you couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. You couldn't really do the movement almost at all.
Yeah. It just doesn't move well. You know, that could be a little bit of a strict standard because for a 2 means it looks okay-ish. It's not perfect.
Because right.
3 means that it looked awesome. You wouldn't do anything to fix it.
Right.
And so
perfect,
you know,
overhead squat.
Yeah, and so I deal out the 2s pretty liberally mm-hmm. because if it's not perfect, it's a 2.
Right.
But if you break it down a bit and then there's an asymmetrical 2, and then that's a problem. And mm-hmm. then if it's a 1, that's a really low hanging fruit. And so we prioritize that movement.
I've got a lot of
for
ones.
Corrections.
You got a lot of 1s.
Oh. Don't feel
Have
bad.
Have you ever seen a 3 before?
Oh yeah.
Ever?
Yeah.
You have seen a 3?
Oh sure. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Usually not 3s across the boards, but yeah.
Do you think you couldn't get a 3?
Well, I don't think I would get a 3.
No.
But maybe.
I think you get a 3.
But then I mean, it's kind of like maybe it seems a little subjective. Like sometimes guys go, "Man, that chick is a 10." And I don't believe.
You know, there's no such thing as a 10. That's ridiculous.
I don't believe in 10s. There might be a 9.5.
So
it's like
until you've met a 10, how would you know, right? I mean,
so I'm thinking maybe there's a 2.5, maybe not a 3 on the overhead squat. Someone's gonna have a problem somewhere,
the,
right?
The only 10s are our wives.
Oh, true. Yeah, I forgot about
oh, yeah.
that.
Yeah, because
oh,
we
yeah.
love them, so.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not even married yet.
Well, so,
I hope they're listening.
Question is, look for the lowest hanging fruit. And so,
go for the other girls.
No. Roll it back.
We're going back to movement.
Back to the movements, you know, what you're going to correct. You know,
right.
Focus on the lowest hanging fruit, because,
okay.
you know, if somebody's doing some overhead squat work and there's 5 people standing around, well, the 4 of us sitting there looking at it, you know, scratching our heads and rubbing our chins, trying to figure out if it's a, you know, a 2.5 or a 3 or maybe 2.75, forget it. Move on, because there's something else that's causing a problem.
Go assess another movement. That's probably going to be more important than trying to, like,
good enough.
Exactly so, because if somebody comes in, and Doug, if we can use your example again.
Sure.
If we spend all our time looking at your bilateral movements, you know, on both sides, looking at your overhead squat, that would look great. And we could have been, you know, figuring out, well, you know, why is your neck sore if the overhead squat's so good?
Mm-hmm.
But instead, it was good. It's probably pretty good. Good
mm-hmm.
enough.
Mm-hmm.
Move on. And then when you find a movement flaw, it's going to really jump out. Mm-hmm. And so you just have to look, keep looking for the right things.
Is that kind of how it goes during an assessment? You're like, well, that looks pretty good. Let's try this. And then you go, this is the problem.
Oh, we found terrible it. There.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really the fun and the beauty of it, because you get to see, I mean, whoever I'm talking to, the lights come on. I said, wow, I had no idea. I was terrible at that.
It becomes obvious to them too.
Yeah, and that's the idea, is to let them know where the problems are. Let them know, you know, what's not working well, like your thoracic rotation. Mm-hmm. It wasn't there. And so I could, you know, I could rotate your shoulders pretty well, but when you rotate it on your own, you just didn't have it. Mm-hmm. All right, so it's like, you know, there's a big aha moment. And then we can look at the correction for it. Mm-hmm. And then it's the most fun to then 10 minutes later recheck it, and it's better. And it's better by, you know, by something that the patient or the client was involved in doing. And so now they've got a really cool take home, and they can they learn how to fix it. It's really cool.
So with the mobility issues, I'd imagine that you prescribe stretches. And then with the stability mm-hmm. stuff, is that more where kind of quote unquote corrective exercise comes in?
Exactly right. Yeah, corrective exercise. And then always give a corrective exercise with an assessment too, a self-assessment.
Okay.
Because otherwise, you know, because maybe it's a bias I have, but when I'm working with somebody, I'm talking to them about, you know, what they've done in the past. And it's a story I hear all the time. Well, I do this exercise, you know, for my hip or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, why do you do that one? Well, you know, I was told to 5 years ago and it worked. So, well, it's good to know. It's good to know at that point that, hey, you've been working on this the whole time, and maybe it's not as important anymore. Mm-hmm. Okay, so have a good take-home self-assessment, or a self-audit, I like to call them. So you can audit the movement yourself and know when to apply the corrective exercise. Because sometimes it's not something you do every day. If it's a stability issue, sometimes mm-hmm. it'll clean up right away. And then check it periodically as part of your movement prep before you train. Mm-hmm. Check it, and if it's grooving well, great. Forget about it. If you're hitting a speed bump with that movement, mm-hmm. audit, then use the corrective, get it working again, mm-hmm. and then move well.
Do you have any examples there where someone has a stability issue? You gave them a couple of exercises and some type of self audit that you could state right now that way we could see. Not in a general way, but like in a very specific way, exactly sure. what that looks like.
Sure. Okay, so somebody comes in and they try to stretch out their hamstrings all the time because their hamstrings are tight and they're always tight.
Okay.
And so they do, you know, bend forward, touch your toes. It doesn't look good, but their movement, their strategy, they don't hip hinge like a deadlift.
Right.
They're just flexing forward at their low back first, reach for their toes. And if you stand up and flex forward at your low back first, your brain says, stop, don't do that. And so the movement stops and they don't reach very far.
Makes mm-hmm. sense.
And then
I can follow. You follow, Mike?
Yeah,
we good? Got it.
Got it. Okay.
So, if I can follow, you crystal people at home clear. Have it. Yeah,
makes you feel good.
Good to go.
So then, a couple minutes just working on basically a hip hinge, shooting the butt back, like a good deadlift technique. That's more hip motion and less back motion. Groove that a couple of times, and then go back into the same assessment. And we didn't stretch in the hamstrings, but they've mm-hmm. got more range. Mm-hmm. And they say, wow, that's really cool. I didn't stretch my hamstrings, and now we're actually addressing the problem.
You just expanded their awareness of what the real issue is.
Exactly right.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people don't like to do kind of touch your toes, hamstring style stretches. Mm-hmm. You know, I reach down, touch my toes. I'm stretching everything behind me. I'm not really stretching my hamstrings, but I'm stretching whatever's getting elongated that's on the back half of my body.
Yeah, whichever's loosest gets stretched first.
That's exactly right. Whatever is the easiest to pull straight is going to pull straight first, and everything else is going to fall behind. So if we break it down, and for the moment we say that you're really stretching your low back and your hamstrings. My hamstrings are big, long, or big, powerful, strong muscles, and my low back has a bunch of little tiny muscles, a whole bunch of them in a very small space. They're probably going to stretch tight first, and then they are going to be the things that pull on my big hamstrings. So they're probably going to be stretching more than my hamstrings in that example. Kind of like if you tie a very small band to a very, you know, very thick large band, and then you tie them end to end and you pull on them, the small band's going to stretch a lot. The big band's not going to stretch very much at all. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what's going on when you're stretching your hamstrings by touching your toes. Your low back stretches a lot. Hamstrings,
makes
you
a lot
feel
of
in
sense.
Your hamstrings, but they're not really being stretched that much. Your low back's taking the majority of that stress. So.
And you say, these hamstrings suck. They're so tight. Well, they're just your hamstrings. They're doing what hamstrings do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't blame
you
the
got it.
hamstrings.
Right. Don't blame your hamstrings, asshole.
So knowing which joints and which muscles are supposed to be stretched and which ones really aren't supposed to be stretched goes a long way to the types of stretching that you prescribe. Can you kind of dig into that a little bit and talk about how you prescribe these exercises and why you know you're working and stretching the right things versus the wrong things, like you're stretching your hamstrings and you're not stretching your low back in most cases?
Well, sure, yeah. It depends on the person, but it's all about the quality of the movement. So take the same guy, all right, and he needs to work on his hip hinge pattern. So that's his new stretch, all right? And I usually... do this when I say stretch or somebody.
Quotation marks, people on iTunes. He made sarcastic quotation marks.
Sarcastic quotation
marks. Sarcastic hand.
That's your new stretch.
Hopefully, can you hear my voice? That's our new stretch.
Stretch. You get the inflection there.
So hip hinging like a good morning.
Exactly right.
A good morning exercise. Back straight, bending the hip. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, grooving that pattern. And then they can enjoy a better pattern through their movement as opposed to sitting down and trying to pound out some range in their hamstrings.
Pound and range.
Felt that one coming.
You saw that one coming?
Yeah.
Our consciousness is linked, CTP.
Felt it in his bones.
All right.
You haven't really been saying much this episode. You're kind of just hanging out over there.
He's learning. He's blown away by all the knowledge.
Listening to you two guys go at it.
Yeah, we've been doing the majority of the talking. How did I end up doing the majority of the talking? Where are you guys?
You're the requisite mobility guy. This is your bread and butter.
True story.
Fuck, me and Bledsoe are learning a lot here. We're students.
I'm just in here drinking coffee. Just listening.
There you go.
Having a good time.
Oh, right. I'm a host. I'm supposed to be saying things.
So if someone wanted to learn more about functional movement screens and the, kind of this joint-by-joint mobility, stability concept, where would they go? Is there any resources out there for this topic?
Oh, sure. You can go to functionalmovement.com, and that's a very accessible website, and there's a lot of resources there. And depending on when this podcast goes up, I'll probably put some on my blog at drbradcole.com.
You posted a few things in the past on this very topic. I think you went through each joint kind of blog by blog at one point. Oh, ankles,
call
knees.
Out. Call me out. That's the plan, at least.
He said he was going to do it.
It was going to be that, like, the 12-month project, and now it's going to be like a 4-year project.
It was
project.
Like your book. Yeah.
Uh-huh. The book's almost done.
Doug and I outlined a book once.
We're basically done.
Nice.
Did the hard part.
That was a hard part.
You're writing a book now. You've learned your lesson.
Teaser.
Shit, don't tell me
now the
that.
World
now
knows.
I'm committed.
I'm putting the pressure so you'll finish.
No, you guys are my inspiration when it comes to publication. You guys are consistently doing a really good job. And I bang out an article, a blog every now and then.
That's because we're too dumb to know we should stop. We just keep going.
There's people that could do a way better job than us, but for some reason we just keep plugging away and showing up.
Consistency. That's
the hardest part of podcasting, by the way, folks.
Showing up.
It's the hardest part of life. If you want results, you want to get...
That's true.
Podcasting is the same as stretching. If you want to have a result, it doesn't matter if you're perfect. Doesn't matter if you have all the answers. What matters is you show up and you work on it. And you keep looking for the answer.
Yep,
that's true. If you drive to the gym, you'll magically be in shape. Seriously, that's the hard part. Just go to the gym. If you get there, you'll work out and you'll train hard. Well, but getting there's the hard part.
You have to show up to a gym where they're writing the workout for you. I've definitely seen people show up to certain gyms, wander around for half an hour, and then walk right back out.
Same goes for stretching. Same goes. It's quality and showing up.
Yeah. There we go. So it's a time spent in assessment saves time to treatment. Time spent in programming saves time to training.
Ooh.
Sweat on the mat or bleed in the streets.
That's a good thing to end on.
All right, let's wrap this up. It's just the analogies are getting ridiculous. All right, Doug, what you got?
I suppose the most relevant topic product for this episode is maximum mobility. If you want to learn how to do your own self-assessment and figure out where you're tight and where you actually need to stretch, that way you're not just stretching for quote-unquote no reason. See, when I quote, I say quote-unquote.
They're good.
That way the people on iTunes
now
know.
Now, are you quoting,
saying
nothing, and then unquoting, and then going on with a statement?
I don't know.
What part do you
unquote
at?
I'm
going to
skip past it, though. So if you want to learn how to do your own self-assessment, maximum mobility basically goes through each of your joint ranges of motion, tells you how much range of motion you're supposed to have for most quote-unquote functional movement. There's another quote-unquote. And then shows you exactly what to do to fix it and to get more range of motion if you actually have a problem. So if you want to check out maximum mobility, you can go to barbershug.com and click on the shop, click on products, and you can see maximum mobility there. It has more information about it on the product page.
And if you already bought it, we're updating it soon.
Doug's like, we are?
Chris wants to update it soon. We are?
We filmed some stuff the other day.
Oh, yeah. We filmed a bunch of stretches the other day. I was like, oh, we are? Yeah, we do. We filmed a bunch of stretches the other day, so we're going to post those up here pretty soon. So hopefully by the time this episode posts, we have a bunch of stretches that you can reference.
That's the beauty of the way we do our products is we actually host the product on our own website. That way we can update them so they're constantly improving. It's not like you download it one time and that's all you get.
Yeah, if we burn physical DVDs, that'd be a huge pain to update.
They're
going to
get better, yeah.
All right, Brad, tell us if people are, at least if they live in Memphis and they want to take advantage of your services and then fix some pain that they have, where can they reach you?
Yeah, you can find me at drbradcole.com or Cole Pain Therapy Group, C-O-L-E, colepaintherapygroup.com. Mm-hmm. Or find me on Twitter, Dr. Brad Cole.
And y'all are on Bartlett.
You got right? Dr. Brad Cole?
Got it.
Damn.
No numbers, nothing.
This Dr. No Brad underscores.
Cole. No. Dr. Brad Cole underscore 2018 dot dash me. Find me.
Good luck.
If your Twitter handle is your name and the year of your birth, you're a douche.
No one's going to find you.
Oh, all right, Chris, what do you got?
Yeah, go to barbellbuddha.com. I write, I podcast on the Barbell Buddha podcast. You can find those things there. I think you'll love it. And also, there's a link to a store where you can support those efforts by picking up a nice signed copy of Progress. You can download a digital copy, and there's some other things on there. So please check it out. I'm your friend. Book. I'm here to help you. That's my book.
Mike, it's there. Your turn.
You can also find Chris's book on iTunes.
And Amazon.
And Amazon.
Search Sexy Chris Moore, and it'll come up. No, just search my name. And
I wonder if it would.
Click Google Images. Search Sexy Chris Moore. Google Images.
You'll find some pictures that I'm not particularly proud of in my past.
All right, guys. Don't forget, head over to Facebook, like us there, and sign up for our newsletter at barbellshrug.com. And I will see you next week.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Brad.
Guys. I appreciate it.
You bet.